from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. Matt Steinmetz and Evan Giddings today. And I'll tell you what, So the boss, hopefully he's come through. We don't have
reason to believe he won't. Come on.
No, we're going to have a special guest at 12:30. Raleigh Fingers is going to join us. And obviously former relief pitcher for the Oakland A's. But Raleigh Fingers was mentioned prominently last night by Reggie Jackson. And Reggie Jackson essentially said, if it weren't for Raleigh Fingers and Dave Duncan, Joe Rudy and his wife, Johnny McNamara, former manager, that he never would have made it, because, quite frankly, he was too angry, and he said he would have gotten himself into trouble, and he might have gotten himself into a lot of trouble. And if it weren't for those types of people who took care of him. Reggie was very emotional. We're going to play it again at some point. But Raleigh Fingers, who was mentioned again prominently by Reggie Jackson last night. And interestingly, just to tell you, the boss got a hold of Raleigh Fingers, and Raleigh had not heard what Reggie had said. And Raleigh, I guess, was a little surprised that he mentioned Raleigh Fingers. And so my boss, Matt Nahegan, has now sent Raleigh Fingers the video and the sound of what we just played. And we're going to get Raleigh Fingers' reaction to it. And I can't wait. I mean, it's a great pull, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I mean, number one, he's an all-timer. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the greatest to ever lace him up. So there's that aspect to it as just a fan of baseball that I'm looking forward to. But that was also the biggest takeaway I had from the event at Rickwood Field. It wasn't about the game. I'm not going to lie. I didn't care a lick if the Giants won, if the Giants lost. They could have tied. It was insignificant. It didn't matter. The only thing that I was happy about is that the game went long enough so there could be more stories shared, and it wasn't, you know, your classic two-hour pitch clock game. In fact, they should have abolished the pitch clock just for the game last night, because all I wanted to do was listen to Reggie Jackson before the game. Also came on during the game. Barry Bonds before the game. There's also a nice sit-down that he did with MLB Network that you can go and watch on social media. You know, Bill Greason, they did a fantastic 5 to 6 minute feature before the game on him, featuring him during the game, interviewing these different Negro League players that are still left standing during the game. Bob Kendrick, president of the Negro League Baseball Museum in Kansas City. They talked to him for multiple innings, in which I just felt like a fly on the wall, and it felt like John Smoltz and Joe Davis were too. They just let him tell stories. That is what the game was about to me. It was not about the Giants losing 6-5, although, by the way, that's also symbolic. You're asking if I believe in God, and I'm on the fence about it, but Willie Mays was born on May 6th, 5-6. So even within the actual result of the game, there was still something a little bit bigger than the game itself.
Well, you know what I heard, and I read it somewhere, is the Giants' next home game is the 24th. Is that June 24th?
Yeah.
24. Willie Mays. Let's go to Damon is in San Leandro. Hey, Damon, how you doing?
Oh, it's a good day, Steiny.
Well, thank you.
And Evan, how are y'all? I saw the game last night, and of course, it was poignant what Reggie had to say, and I totally commiserate with him. I recall a pregame show with Ray Fosse during an A's game, and Reggie was being interviewed, and Ray asked him this question: Reggie, could you have gone through what Jackie went through? Reggie gave a one-word answer: no. And then Ray went to the next question. And I got it, what he was saying at that particular time. But one has to remember that we all don't anodyne bad situations the same way. I like the way Willie Mays did it because he did it peacefully. I know he must have felt something. Nevertheless, he saw the ultimate goal to where he needed to go because he knew that if he had made it, another person who looked like him will come through that door. And that was the ultimate goal to me.
Right.
Anytime someone is trying to block you from your goal. And I just recall what Michelle Obama said, when they go low, you go high.
Thanks,
and that's
for
all I have.
Thanks, Damon. Appreciate it. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to speak for Reggie, but clearly there were times where Reggie didn't want to go high or couldn't go high. And that's where apparently Raleigh Fingers and some real good men helped him out. And last night he made it clear. So I can't wait. We're going to get Raleigh Fingers on in 20 minutes. Great relief pitcher for the Oakland A's. But I think what a lot of us learned last night, Evan, is apparently Raleigh Fingers is a great person too.
Yeah, I mean, and Reggie also spoke about that in his documentary. There's a really good book on the 70s A's called like Dynastic, Bombastic, Fantastic, The Swingin' A's in the 1970s. And it kind of goes through mostly the baseball aspect of things, but it also gives you a little more insight into Reggie the person. And Reggie was, he talked about it last night, like he was, and he talked about it in a documentary. He's an angry guy, or he was an angry person. And after sharing what he did, and I know you can play it again in a moment, it's understandable. Like, Michelle Obama's right. They're, you know, when they go low, we go high. Well, not everybody can go high. But the difference between, obviously, you and I, Steiny, and someone like Reggie Jackson is, if Reggie Jackson goes low, there's consequences.
Right.
When we go low, there's not real consequences. Or, you know, you might get reprimanded or, you might get fined. If I say something stupid on the radio today, right, you know, I might get a slap on the wrist or suspended. You know, if Reggie Jackson, and he said this, that, I think that's why he was admitting how grateful he was to someone like Raleigh Fingers. And I'm curious just to know if Raleigh ever felt that, you know, from Reggie, that appreciation, and if he had an understanding or an idea of what he was going through at the time. Because if Reggie acted like he said, I mean, he said it. You could play it again. Like, he said he would have been hanging from an oak tree. So it wasn't just, you know, you said, you know, there was something to lose if Reggie did, you know, what he wanted to do. Well, it wasn't just his career. Like, he knew that he could lose his life.
Right.
And that's a reality that doesn't exist anymore for most people for good reason. But it doesn't mean that it didn't exist. And he was trying to highlight that aspect of America.
The one part, Evan, that you couldn't really tell from what Reggie said. I was watching the video, and I don't know what to make of it, and I have no judgment on it, but it just struck me. And if somebody can speak to it, I would love to hear. So at the end of the interview that Reggie did, the last thing he said was, "I would have been hanging from an oak tree." I don't know if you watched what happened after that, but Alex Rodriguez kind of looked at Reggie and Reggie looked at Alex Rodriguez, and you could tell Alex Rodriguez couldn't believe like what Reggie had said, probably not just about the oak tree, but when he said the N-word.
You should play it again.
Twice. I will, after I quickly explain they almost like laughed about it, even though it was an unbelievably serious comment. And there was something there that I can't put my finger on. It wasn't funny, but there was a truth about it that both guys acknowledged that Reggie was sharing something that, wow, you really went for it, Reggie. Here it is again.
Coming back here is not easy. The racism that I played here, when I played here, the difficulty of going through different places where we traveled. Fortunately, I had a manager and I had players on the team that helped me get through it. But I wouldn't wish it on anybody. People said to me today, I spoke and they said, you think you're a better person? You think you won when you played here and conquered? I said, you know, I would never want to do it again. I walked into restaurants and they would point at me and said, the can't eat here. I would go to a hotel and they say, the can't stay here. We went to Charlie Finley's country club for a welcome home dinner and they pointed me out with the N-word. He can't come in here. Finley marched the whole team out. Finally, they let me in there. He said, we're going to go to the diner and eat hamburgers. We'll go where we're wanted. Fortunately, I had a manager, Johnny McNamara, that if I couldn't eat in the place, nobody would eat. We'd get food to travel. If I couldn't stay in a hotel, they'd drive to the next hotel and find a place where I could stay. Had it not been for Raleigh Fingers, Johnny McNamara, Dave Duncan, Joe and Sharon Rudy, I slept on their couch 3-4 nights a week for about a month and a half. Finally, they were threatened that they would burn our apartment complex down unless I got out. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. The year I came here, Bull Connor was the sheriff the year before. And they took minor league baseball out of here. Because in 1963, the Klan murdered 4 black girls, children, in 11, 12, 14 years old at a church here and never got indicted. It was there from the Klan. Life magazine did a story on them like they were being honored. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. At the same time, had it not been for my white friends, had it not been for a white manager and Rudy Fingers and Duncan and Lee Myers, I would have never made it. I was too physically violent. I was ready to physically fight some. I'd have got killed here because I'd have beat someone's ass, and you'd have saw me in an oak tree somewhere.
That's Reggie Jackson, courtesy of Fox Sports.
I mean, I think the laughter you hear is, well, you're laughing at, you know, the idea of Reggie Jackson beating someone's ass, but also it's an uncomfortable laugh.
Right.
It's because you don't know what to say. You know, I think you hear A-Rod laughing because it's not a fun story. And he's trying to nervously bring some, you know, I don't know, some joy to the situation, because I think that's just inherent. Like, When I hear that, yeah, it makes me feel uncomfortable, because people that look like me did those kind of things to people that look like Reggie Jackson. All I know about Reggie Jackson is that he's a great baseball player. I've had nothing but respect for Reggie Jackson since I started learning about the major leagues, because I only knew him as a player. But the time in which Reggie Jackson was a great baseball player was not a great time to him. And so while he wasn't able to be as joyful and happy at all times as Willie Mays, or
right,
it doesn't mean that, I don't know, like, it just, it's powerful.
Let's listen to more Reggie Jackson. This is from last night at Rickwood Field, Birmingham, Alabama. This is about Willie Mays specifically, whom Reggie knew well.
I think Willie Mays meant to me the same thing that he meant to most people. He was a Baryshnikov on the baseball field. As far as being given the most skills, you've got Babe Ruth, you've got Hank Aaron, you've got Lou Gehrig, you've got Barry Bonds, you've got Alex Rodriguez. These guys that were gifted all of these skills, but the guy that got the most skills, I believe, of anyone, run, throw, hit with power, defense, as well as baseball instincts. He had 6 rather than 5. Was really a special player. I think that he had a lot of things to say about the game, but at the time when Willie was playing, Hank Aaron was playing, the Willie McCoveys were playing, the Bob Gibsons were playing, they grew up in an era when you had to complain about the game or complain about society, you suppressed it. Today's player doesn't do that.
That was more Reggie Jackson from last night. I'm just going to keep this going. This is even more insight on Willie.
I learned by watching Willie Mays. He was the first guy to get his uniform tapered. He and Mickey Mantle. But the way that he showed the love of the game, the way he respected the game, even when he had a complaint about what may have been going on with minorities or whatever. In his era, Derek, you didn't speak about it. He loved the game so much that he refrained. But my admiration for him was how he went about it and how he showed people like me following him how to play. I would say to a guy that had a chance to play with you, watch him. You'll learn a lot.
More Reggie Jackson from last night. Can I ask you a question?
Of course.
Because I always tell the story about a 5-minute fool and a lifetime fool. What do you know offhand what a tapered uniform is?
Well, like you get your suit set, right?
Oh, so, like it was fitted. Like it was a fitted. It wasn't just a uniform. It was.
I mean, that's what I'm
assuming. Got the measurements, like the inseam and stuff. Okay. I didn't know.
Well, I'm assuming that the best players at the time could kind of get their own, stuff. You know, Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle.
I mean, I don't want to be ignorant, but like I was thinking, yeah, I guess Steph Curry's uniform is made for Steph Curry. He's not deciding between double X and single X.
Well, I'm assuming. I mean, when I think of a taper, I think of, like a haircut.
Yeah.
So you're just getting a trend.
Gotcha. By the way, did you see on the set last night, they had a box of Reggie bars?
Did they?
Yeah, they did. I didn't even know they made them anymore. Have you ever had a Reggie bar?
No, I don't know what that is.
You don't know what that is?
Well, I know it's a candy bar, the Reggie Jackson spot.
I can tell you a little bit more about it.
Well, please do, Steiny. Okay.
So in 78, when Reggie hit 3 homers in the game 6, Yankee Stadium, they won the series in 6 games. So he hit 3 homers. They win the World Series. That offseason, they created a Reggie candy bar. It was a square candy bar. Well, it was a round candy bar in a square package. And it had Reggie swinging. And the following season, they gave away Reggie bars opening day at Yankee Stadium. And guess who homered?
Let me guess. Reggie.
And guess what happened? They threw candy bars on the field at Yankee Stadium the opening day the year after he hit 3 home runs to help the Yankees win the series. Here's another thing I learned about Willie Mays. Apparently he had a firm handshake. A firm handshake.
Well, have you seen those old pictures of how many baseballs he could hold in his hand?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Not as many as Johnny Bench, I don't think. I mean, there's a picture of him having holding 8 baseballs, but yeah, Willie could fit easily 4 or 5 baseballs in his hand. Those are some massive mitts.
You know, I don't know if you ever had a chance to meet Ray Fosse, late Ray Fosse. He had a bone-crushing handshake.
Dude, I swear to God, you talked about this, maybe your metabolism falls off when you get older.
Yes.
Testosterone levels begin to go down. Your muscle begins to dwindle. That might all be true, but I swear to God that as soon as you started getting older, the older you get, the firmer and stronger your handshake is. I don't know how, but I've had the chance to, shake, the military members of my family, at all the reunions and stuff. Dude, everybody over the age of 90 would break my hand. I don't get it.
Well, that's when it was a simpler time. And the firmness of a handshake told you about the man. You could know about the man.
Rip it and then just smile. Well, like,
I mean, let's face it. If we've all done our handshakes in our life, some people have the firm one and some people have the noodle.
Well, who goes limp fish? I mean,
too many people go noodle. I don't understand it. I mean, I'm not asking to break fingers. I'm just asking.
No, but they try.
I know they do. They do try. one other thing. I got six things listed. Raleigh fingers.
Did Catfish Hunter say this, by the way?
He did. Yeah, that's what I wanted to get to. Go ahead and read this. I do remember this.
This is incredible. The Reggie bar is the only candy bar that when you unwrap it, it tells you how good it is.
Yep.
That was from Catfish Hunter.
Yep. I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, if you're not familiar with Reggie Jackson and you just kind of, you know, heard some of the sound we're saying and how he speaks and, you know, how great he can convey a thought, you can understand why he owned New York in the 70s when they won two championships and he was the straw that stirred the drink.
Was he the most liked member of the Yankees?
No, he was hated.
Well, then what do you mean?
Well, not hated, but he was not.
You just said he owned the city.
Well, after he hit three homers. I'm not saying when he was first came to the Yankees, he was disliked because he was outspoken. He didn't get along with, obviously, he didn't get along with Billy Martin. They had an infamous fight in the dugout after Billy Martin pulled Reggie Jackson out of right field. Did you know this?
Oh, I know that Billy Martin used to fight everyone.
Yeah. Billy Martin took Reggie Jackson out of right field in the middle of an inning, which is unheard of. And Reggie ran off the field and they got into it in the dugout. There was also...
The only player that Billy Martin was kind to was Ricky Henderson, apparently.
Billy was tough, apparently.
Yeah, but if he liked you, you were his guy.
You're right.
Like he would...
Like he was like
Ricky everywhere.
Right. In that sense, he was an unbelievable teammate because he had everybody on his team's back. I remember a story where Reggie and Billy, boy, they didn't get along. So Reggie was up in the, I can't remember the situation. It might have been a ninth inning. There was a guy on second with no outs. And Billy Martin asked Reggie to bunt, to sacrifice. And the story's a little different, though. So Reggie... According to Billy Martin, Reggie goes to bunt, strike one, he missed it. Puts on the bunt sign again. Strike two, Reggie missed it. After Reggie gets two strikes, according to Billy Martin instructed the first base coach, okay, he's hitting away now. I don't want him to try to bunt now. He's got two strikes. And that's when apparently Reggie tried to bunt again. And he ended up striking out. And Martin was just incensed. And Reggie, of course, and this is the thing you never knew about Reggie. Like, I'm pretty sure Reggie said, I must have missed the signal. I know he wanted me to push the runner over early in that bat. So I don't know why he would have taken off, you know, but it was, those Yankee teams were, Reggie Jackson and Thurman Munson, I remember hearing this story. Reggie Jackson and Thurman Munson did not like each other. And I mentioned this guy a lot, Rocky Colavito, but he was a coach of the Cleveland Indians. And Rocky had a son that we knew. And Rocky Jr. used to tell these stories about the Yankees because he got them from his dad, who was a coach of the Indians. And the one thing I remember Rocky Jr. saying is that, you know, back in the... In those days with the Yankees, he said, every time Thurman Munson and Reggie Jackson passed each other in a hallway or in the dugout, the whole team shuddered because they always felt that those two were always this far from going at it. They really did not like each other.
Well, you do know that the 1970s A's were the swinging A's.
Correct.
It was a double entendre.
Right.
Wasn't about offense.
Well, I mean...
They used to fight each other.
Well, if you think about that. So Reggie went from the swinging A's to the Bronx Zoo. Who is the common denominator?
Reggie Jackson.
Reggie Jackson. All right. On the other side, I'm really looking forward to this. We are going to talk to Raleigh Fingers, great relief pitcher for the Oakland A's, but mentioned prominently last night by Reggie Jackson as somebody that, had Raleigh not been in Reggie's life, things may have turned out a lot differently. We're going to talk to Raleigh Fingers on the other side on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Matt Steinmetz and Evan Giddings, and we're talking about a lot of stuff today. We're talking about the game at Rickwood Field in Birmingham. We're talking about Willie Mays, obviously his passing, touching the Bay Area. We're talking about Reggie Jackson, who last night was a prominent part of the telecast and was just as authentic as Reggie Jackson gets. We have Raleigh Fingers on the phone. He was a teammate of Reggie Jackson's at the time, but Raleigh, before I talk to you, I would like our listeners to just take one quick listen, and hopefully along with you, of what Reggie said last night mentioning your name. Take a listen, Raleigh.
Had it not been for Raleigh Fingers, Johnny McNamara, Dave Duncan, Joe and Sharon Rudy, I slept on their couch 3-4 nights a week for about a month and a half. Finally, they were threatened that they would burn our apartment complex down unless I got out. I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
All right, so right now we're joined by Raleigh Fingers, 7-time All-Star, 3 World Series rings, inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1992, one of the greatest relief pitchers of all time. Raleigh, I got to tell you, I knew you were a great pitcher, but I learned a lot more about you last night.
Well, that was, it was kind of a crazy time in my career, because that's the first time I'd ever played baseball in the South. I mean, my first, I was in the Florida State League in 1965, and then in 1966, I played in the California League. That's where I met Joe Rudy, and Reggie Jackson was on our team there, so we became real good friends. And then we both went to, all three of us went to Birmingham in 1967, and, you know, I had never been anything around anything racially concerned. You know, I didn't know about that stuff being in California, and it was kind of bad there for Reggie. We first got there, he couldn't find a place to live. Joe, Rudy and I, we got into an apartment complex about 20 minutes from the ballpark, and Reggie had no place to stay, so he stayed out with Joe Rudy and I. We'd kind of switch off. He would stay on our couches, and the people that were in the development, they didn't particularly care about seeing Reggie there, and you know, they were threatening us, and so Reggie was there for probably about a month, maybe a month and a half, and then he finally found a place. But it wasn't good for Jim traveling around to the teams, the cities that we went to in the South. I mean, we were going into Macon, Georgia, Montgomery, Alabama, Evansville, Indiana, Knoxville, Tennessee. And, you know, we were on road trips, and some of these road trips were 8-10 hour trips. And if we pulled over to a place to get something to eat, they wouldn't let him come in. And so we'd have to move on. Or if we were out in the middle of nowhere, he would stay on the bus and we would go in and get food and bring it back out to him. So it wasn't a fun time for Reggie playing in the minor league, especially in the Southern League that year.
Yeah, well, Reggie told a couple stories about what he went through. Can you describe what his white teammates were like? Were they all like you and trying to help him along? Were other of his teammates maybe just distancing themselves? What kind of dynamic was that?
No, it wasn't. The guys that we had on the team, we all liked Reggie. I mean, everybody liked Reggie. I think we had one other black ball player on the team. Oh, God, I think it was a pitcher, but I can't remember his name. And we had we had a couple of Puerto Ricans on the team, and I think there was we had one Dominican Republic ball player on the team. But there was only two black players, and Reggie was one of them. But we all got along. I mean, all the ball players loved Reggie. We all got along with Reggie real well. He was fine back then. No problems at all. He was a good guy.
Well, and one of the reasons it feels like a lot of people have spoken so fondly about him is because he wore it on his sleeve. I mean, he let people know exactly how he felt, which was also one of the reasons he described last night why you guys were so important to keeping him from doing something that he might regret. So I'm curious if you ever saw Reggie Jackson let these things affect him. You know, did he let on what he'd been harboring? And he spoke about it in his documentary as well. At that time, the racism, the vitriol, everything that he had to deal with, how much did he let on to you guys, especially when you're in that apartment complex and you're sharing rooms together?
Yeah, well, you know, he wasn't real happy about the situation. He thought that he was imposing on us, but he wasn't imposing on us. And like I say, everybody on the ball club, we got along fine. But it was something that he wasn't used to. I mean, he was a big football star at ASU. There was no really any problems there when he was going to college at ASU. Then he signed and that year in 1965, he came up to Modesto and joined the Modesto A's. And, you know, we heard that we're getting this running back. So what the hell are we going to do with a running back? But then when he got there, at about 5 or 6 o'clock every day, he would put on a hitting display that you wouldn't believe. He would hit balls so far, there isn't any ballpark that couldn't hold a ball on him. He's a strong arm. He could throw strikes from the outfield to home plate. You could just tell he was going to be a great ball player. And he joined us about midseason, and we ended up winning the league that year. We got to Birmingham in 67. We won the league that year. He had a great year. And then he went on to the big leagues. But, 67 was a tough year for him. But he didn't really come out and say a whole lot about it when he was talking with, Joe and I or any of the guys on the team.
We're joined by Raleigh Fingers, 7-time All-Star, won 3 World Series, including the MVP in 74. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1992, teammate of Reggie Jackson. I'm kind of interested, Raleigh, in knowing, you played with him in Birmingham, you played with him in Kansas City, then you came to Oakland. And, you know, I'm just wondering, did the issues follow him to Oakland? What was the difference between Birmingham, Kansas City, and Oakland, if there was any? Was he more comfortable out here?
He was a lot more comfortable. I think once you get to the big league, that stuff went out the window. We were going to big cities, Kansas City, Anaheim, Milwaukee. I mean, we never had any problems. New York, playing the Yankees or Boston or going to Cleveland. We never really had any problems racially in the big leagues. It was just that one year in 1967, there was a lot of problems in the South. And after that, once you got to the big leagues, really, there was no problem at all. As far as staying in hotels, we all stayed in pretty nice hotels, and we could go into all the restaurants usually, no problems. So it wasn't that bad.
Well, I was going to ask Raleigh, it's obviously incomparable to what Reggie had to go through as a black man. But, when he says thanks to yourself, to Joe Rudy, to Dave Duncan, I mean, did you guys ever feel it? Or did you guys ever, were you ever approached by anyone as those that stood up for Reggie Jackson just because everyone looked down on him, that you had to be the teammates both on and off the field? But did you ever feel pressure to not necessarily not be, but did you feel that kind of the residual effects of what Reggie was dealing with?
He was staying with us out at a complex, and no one really ever approached us. Word was getting around that they didn't like Reggie being there. But no one really ever approached us, me or Joe Rudy, because we were hanging out together. When we went to the ballpark, we would all drive in the same car, go to the ballpark. And when we would come home, we never really had any problems. But it was hard for Reggie to find a place to live. He wanted to, you know, stay in a nice area, and most of the nice areas didn't welcome us. So it was a little tough for him there. But he got through the season. I know it was kind of rough for him, but he never really spoke that much about it.
Raleigh Fingers joining us on 95.7 The Game, teammate of Reggie Jackson, three-time World Series winner. The one thing that I'm interested in is when, you know, Reggie mentioned you specifically last night with Johnny McNamara, Joe Rudy, and a couple others, and what I'm curious about is, you know, he used the phrase that if it wasn't for white guys like you, that he may have ended up hanging from an oak tree. And what I'm wondering is, at that time, did you realize you might be doing something special or extraordinary? And then when you heard what he said last night, what kind of impact does that have on you?
I think both Joe and I were very appreciative of what he said. We were just being friends. I mean, we were friends for almost 2 years already. And, Reggie was a great guy, and it was just the South. That was the problem. And, we appreciate everything that, he said last night. I heard the tape, and, at the time, you don't really think about that. I wasn't thinking about that. All I was doing was being a friend, same as Joe Rudy and John McNamara. Our manager was a great guy, and he wasn't going to put up with that stuff either. And so, all the other guys on the team felt the same way.
Well, Raleigh, what we have you here, obviously a big part of last night's event at Rickwood Field was the honoring of Willie Mays, one of the greatest to ever lace him up. And you had the opportunity to pitch against him throughout your career, but also in the World Series. You know, he got his last hit of his Major League Baseball career off you in Game 2 of the 73 World Series. That was also the first year you guys shared the field in an All-Star game. Could you just tell us, you know, kind of what your lasting memory of Willie Mays is, and if there's any times you guys interacted, if there's a story you could share with us?
Well, when I grew up as a kid, I moved from Ohio to L.A., and there was no baseball in 1955. And then the Dodgers, Brooklyn came in 58, and the Giants came in 58. So we got the first time I was ever even able to watch a big league ball game was when the Dodgers and the Giants played one another, and I became a big Willie Mays fan. I loved Willie Mays. I mean, he was it. I wanted to see the Dodgers win, but I wanted to see Willie Mays do good. And so my dad came home from work one day and said, "Hey, let's go to a Dodger game." We hardly ever never went. And I said, "Well, who's playing?" He said, "The Giants are playing." I said, "Oh, cool." So we go to the ballpark, and my dad said, "Where do you want to sit?" I said, "I want to sit in the center field bleachers. I mean, Willie's going to be 50 feet from me. I'm going to watch, I'll see Willie Mays." So I started talking to a kid next to me, and he said, "Hey, you want to go try and get some autographs after the game?" And I said, "You know where the players come out?" He pointed up to a parking lot. I said, I asked my dad, and he said, "Okay." That was like I was about 11, 12 years old, something like that. And so we go up there, and I couldn't get close to anybody. I mean, I saw Koufax and Drysdale and Duke Snyder and Maury Wills and Orlando Cepeda and McCovey, all the golf players coming out, but I couldn't get close to anybody. And a door opened over off to my left, and it caught my eye, and it's Willie. And Willie's sneaking down through the parking lot at Dodger Stadium. So I'm chasing Willie now in the parking lot at Dodger Stadium. And I get to the car where he's at, and I said, "Mr. Mays, would you, sign my autograph?" Signed the autograph, Willie Mays, and that was it. And 13 years later, I'm on the mound in the 73 World Series, and I hear the announcer say, "Now batting, Willie Mays." Now, all of a sudden, I'm, it's kind of surreal. You're facing a guy that, you idolized as a kid. So on that particular at-bat, I struck him out on three pitches. And then the next game, I think it was game 2, he had a high hopper over my head. That was his last major league hit. And there was a guy on third, so it was his last major league RBI.
Wow.
So I was the last guy to strike him out. He got his last hit off me, and he got his last RBI off me. So I told Willie when I got into the Hall of Fame in 1992, I went over to his table. We were having our dinner, and I told Willie this story. And I said, Willie, it's a good thing you signed that autograph, or I'd have drilled your hind end.
Hey, Raleigh, I actually got a... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Did I interrupt you?
Well, that was no way I was going to hit Willie Mays.
You know, Raleigh, I actually got a story about you that I remember fondly, and you'll probably never remember, but you used to play in the celebrity golf tournament up in Tahoe, right?
Oh, yeah. All the time.
Yeah, so I went up there to cover it. I was working for a newspaper, and they used to have a program of all the celebrities and former athletes who were participating, and it was a big, you know, kids could get autographs whenever they wanted. The access was incredible, and there was a young kid, must have been 10 years old, and I don't know, you were maybe in your 50s or something, I don't know, and the kid knows you're somebody, and he says, sir, can I have your autograph? And you said, sure. And he starts fumbling through the book, the program of all the celebrities, you know, of the ex-players. And the kid clearly doesn't know who you are. And the kid's getting nervous. And I'm looking at you thinking, I wonder if Raleigh's going to get annoyed. And you could see the kid was fumbling. And you just said, here, young man, let me have the program. He handed you the program. You pulled it open to your page. And you signed the autograph. And you ended up thanking him. And I just thought that was really gracious at the time. I remember it to this day.
Yeah, if he was a young kid, he probably didn't know who I was.
Well,
older.
Well, the world knows who you are now if they didn't before, Raleigh. Just you were spoken very highly of, and just appreciate you coming on so much. It's been a kind of a special week in one way or the other for baseball, and thank you so much for capping it off with us.
All right, my pleasure. Had a great time.
All right. Raleigh Fingers. Three-time World Series MVP, seven-time All-Star, Hall of Fame 1992, 341 career saves, handlebar, mustache, and somebody who left an indelible mark on Reggie Jackson. That was sweet.
That was incredible. And, well, he also won an MVP.
That's right.
Raleigh Fingers did.
I got to believe he was the only reliever to ever win the first reliever to win the MVP.
Yeah. Eckersley also did.
For sure.
But no, that was incredible. And I don't know, just to hear him talk about what that time was like for him, because like he said, he didn't really, well, you know, I guess a lot of white people were privileged and still are to not have to, you know, think about those things. But to see Reggie Jackson go from the Cal League, in which they thought they were getting a running back, which was funny, and then down to AA in Birmingham, and just seeing the stark contrast of the two places, and hear him talk about that. I mean, that was incredible. It was powerful what Reggie said last night, and I feel fortunate that Raleigh was able to add a little more.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about the Reggie bar earlier,
yeah.
And someone texted and said, yeah, Catfish Hunter once said that, you know, the Reggie bar is, what is it not? It's really good, but it tells you how good it is.
It's the only candy bar that when you open it, it'll tell you how good it is.
I kind of remember this one. Just got a text from Mark Ibanez.
Okay.
And he has another line that Catfish used about Reggie Jackson. It's here it is. Catfish Hunter said this about Reggie Jackson. Reggie would give you the shirt off his back and then call a press conference to tell everybody about it. That was Catfish Hunter on Reggie Jackson. Thank you, Mark Ibanez. Appreciate that. But,
well, it also sounds like the openness, you know, whatever way you perceive it, that Reggie Jackson was known for is also the reason why he had no fear to step to the mic last night and talk about all the bad things that happened.
Yeah.
Or the reality that he lived. Like he said... What's it like coming back? Well, actually, it kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have a good time here. And I'm not going to sit up here and tell you that it was all sunshine and rainbows, because it wasn't. And it wasn't for not just Reggie Jackson, but he also, it felt like he was speaking for a lot of people that experienced that. And to also give some of the background of the history and, you know, the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing that happened very shortly before Reggie Jackson got there, was just another reason why he felt everything that Birmingham meant and still means to a lot of people.
Yeah. Let's go out to Jeremy. Jeremy's in Burbank. Hey, Jeremy, how you doing?
I'm good, fellas. What's up? Happy Friday.
Same here.
I just wanted to call and just express my gratitude for all of the interviews and the insights and the callers over these last 3 days. I was working on Wednesday after I heard the news the night before. And it was around 10:30, came around, and I was like, oh, you know, I need to tune in. So it's time you go, because, you know, I need to do what they have to say. And I went on the Odyssey app, I hit rewind, and just it's just been absolutely incredible. I in my sports life, I'm 34 years old, and in my sports life, I live for these kinds of stories of things that happen before my time, you know. So all of the interviews and just everybody's perspective, including your own, and Goo and Steiny and Evan, everybody, I'm eternally grateful. So thank you so much, man.
Thank you very much. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I said this to Evan a couple times in the last 2 days, you know, like sometimes I feel like, you know, what are we doing talking about this, you and me? You know, there should be other people talking about it that probably have better insight. And that's why one of the things I try to do this week is just play all the sound of what others who know more than me, maybe not more than you. You've shown your expertise about this stuff this week, but that's why I kind of wanted to just share everything that everybody has been saying about Willie Mays, the Negro Leagues, now Reggie Jackson. So, yeah, just a conduit, really.
Well, but it's also an opportunity for me to talk to you about it. And, you know, we got to do it on live radio. So I just think in what Reggie Jackson was last night and what all of these players have been over the last few days at Rickwood Field is they've been genuine. They've been open and they've been honest, whether it's been about something that's good, something that's about just baseball, or something that's completely ugly and filthy. And I think that's what I've appreciated about this week is, unfortunately, it kind of was kickstarted by someone passing away. And then the event last night, to your point earlier, Steiny, became more of a celebration of life than anything else. Like, the game was meaningless to me. But to have all these different players that either knew Willie Mays or that had an experience with him or knew someone that knew him, he just touched so many different people. And the message of honesty is, that's all you can ask for. And I think that's why, and I don't want to speak for the caller, but I think that's also what I'm feeling too, is you're learning so much about things that have happened long before he and I were alive, but it doesn't make them any less important, because the privileges that I get to experience as both a younger person, but also as a white person, is very different because of what the people before us and the generations before us either inflicted upon another race or were able to use, and like Raleigh Fingers was able to live above that. It's all valid. A lot of it's ugly, but it does construct the world that we live in. And I just feel like we're better off for understanding why.
Yeah. Somebody said, somebody texted, you know, on a positive note, it's nice to know that there were, you know, there were people like Raleigh Fingers. And the thing that kind of hits me is, you know, it's such a serious issue and it's so important. And Reggie Jackson essentially brought that out last night about how important Raleigh Fingers was. And there's something cool about Raleigh saying, well, we were just friends. You know, he's just a friend. He's a teammate. Like, I don't get the sense those guys thought what they were doing was something extraordinary. They just treated Reggie Jackson like a man.
But I also think that says more about Reggie Jackson. And we can talk to Roy Wood Jr. in a couple of minutes here on the other side, who is also part of the Ben, is a Birmingham, Alabama native. I think it says more about Reggie Jackson, because what we also heard from Raleigh Fingers was that Reggie never burdened any of them with his issues.
Yeah.
He never spoke about it. he internalized it, and it's probably one of the reasons that he might have been as angry as he was.
All right, so coming up on the other side, really looking forward to this one, too. Roy Wood Jr., he's a Birmingham, Alabama native. He's also a stand-up comic. You may have seen him on the former Daily Show. He was a correspondent. He was part of the coverage last night as the sideline reporter. I don't know who would have better insight as to what happened last night than our next guest, Roy Wood Jr. He'll be on the other side. And don't forget to download the Odyssey app directly from our QR code on both YouTube and Twitch. Brought to you by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. That segment was also brought to you by Chilton Auto Body.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.